some really tidy little trades before the trade deadline last year, a young team, some draft picks, etc. And you've got an owner that says he wants to spend. And yet, when Mike Babcock made his decision, a lot of people in Buffalo think he was played by. He played the Buffalo Sabres to get the big bucks in Toronto. How's it playing in Buffalo? How are they feeling in Cheektowaga and Fredonia and all those places around there? My old haunt? Nobody knows better than our good friend Paul Hamilton from WGR joins us this afternoon. How you doing, Paul?
I'm well. How are you?
I am good. Let's ask. I mean, a few days have gone by. Things have settled down. Are people in Buffalo any less happy with what happened?
They moved on, and the team moved on. There's no question the team got played. I mean, the only thing, I mean, it's business, basically. The only thing I would say that was a little cheesy was he did leave some, Tim Murray, not one of them, but he led some others inside the organization that were talking to him to believe that he was coming to Buffalo, and they thought he was coming, and that's the part. I mean, in my mind, just say, hey, I've got other places I need to be. I'll get back to you by such and such a time or whatever. And if you want to take the offer to Toronto, which he did, that's fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Business is done that way, not only in hockey, but in all over the world, all over all sorts of different areas. So that's not a big deal that he did that. It was obvious he wanted to coach Toronto from the start, and that's where he wanted to be. And I think his plan was, I'm going to maximize who I talk to, the offers I get, and in the end, I'll take the final offer to Toronto. And the Maple Leafs, I don't think, knew. I mean, they brought Boucher in from Switzerland and had him sitting there, that actually interviewing him when Babcock called and said, well, up this offer a little bit and I'll come there. And they're like, what? I think they basically thought it was over, too. So I think it was a neatly orchestrated thing by Babcock that I'm just going to get the best offer I can and then take it to Toronto and then become coach of the Leafs.
Is it really your sense that you felt he was going to Toronto all along? I mean, my impression was, knowing Mike, was if the Red Wings could have made the term or the money reasonable, he would have stayed there. I didn't necessarily get the idea that Toronto was an inevitability until, of course, they just said, here, write your own number on this check.
When I say all along, I mean once he knew the Red Wings weren't going to
approach
the money that, and I think he knew that pretty much off the bat. I think he knew the Ilitches weren't going to go where the Pegulas are going to go, or maybe where the Leafs are going to go. He's a smart man, and I think he knew where these offers were going to land. It's no secret. Look at what the Pegulas did to get Rex Ryan. Many, including I, would say that they overpaid to get Rex Ryan, but that's the coach they wanted, and that's the coach they went out and got. So I think he knew what he was getting into, and I think he knew the Ilitches probably wouldn't match that. Now, if the Ilitches wanted to pay him that, you're absolutely right. I think then it changes the game.
It's bad enough, of course, that you have to get the Toronto TV stations down in Buffalo anyhow. You can't avoid them. And then you know, all the stuff. I didn't think he had to go on about, oh, downtown Toronto, it's such a lovely place, etc. Somehow implying that Buffalo or Detroit or these other places weren't nice to live. That didn't sit well with me. I didn't particularly like that part because, of course, it feeds into Toronto's superiority about virtually everything.
Yeah, no, it absolutely did. But once he got there, the organization did move on right away. Tim Murray came on our station, and anytime Tim Murray can try to put down anything a media person or media people say, he will do that, and he certainly did that, and that's fine. And I believe what he said. You know, he is the type of person that the deal is not done until the name is on the contract. So he said, I didn't think the deal was done.
Yeah,
I totally believe that. I just don't think others in the organization felt that way. I think other people in the organization felt that they were dotting the I's and crossing the T's, and they basically had a deal. But, no, I believe Murray. That's just the way he is. He's very bottom line, upfront, and this is what we're going to do. And now he moves on, and he wasn't sitting there just banking on Babcock, as he said, and I had reported that he had talked to a couple of coaches even before Babcock came in. Mm. So, you know, he's a very thorough man. So it wasn't like he had a piece of paper that said Mike Babcock on it, and that was the end of it.
Right.
He has a piece of paper that my guess would be probably has 10 to 15 names on it, and some of which he had already talked to anyway. And he's ready. As soon as Babcock called him at 11:30 and said no, by 11:40, he's in with his staff, and they're talking about the next guy.
Talking to Paul Hamilton, WGR in Buffalo. The sense in the community as well, okay, didn't get Babcock, didn't get McClellan, Hitch is staying in St. Louis, et cetera, that somehow Buffalo is missing some sort of train here, that they should have had their guy by now. Is that a fair assumption?
I'm sorry, you broke up. What was the first part of your question?
Oh, I just said that, you know, the impression was, okay, didn't get Babcock, McClellan ended up in Edmonton, Hitchcock is staying in St. Louis, et cetera. There's this sense that there's some sort of train that's been leaving the station and Buffalo's getting left behind. Is that a fair assumption, or is it, you know, is there some guy that they've got their heart set on who just they can't talk about now?
No, I don't think that is. I'm not sure. I don't know if Hitchcock would have been their guy. I don't see him and Murray getting along, to be quite honest with you. They seem to have kind of the same personalities. So I don't see that one as a, you know, they're talking to Bylsma probably today or tomorrow. And whether that is a match, because Tim Murray was very frank when he talked about firing Ted Nolan that it just didn't work. They didn't. And he needs to find somebody that can mesh with him. And whether that is Dan Bylsma, I wouldn't be able to tell you unless I was sitting in on the conversations and the meetings. But that's what he has to find. So that's, I think, moving forward where he's looking at. There's a guy who used to coach the Montreal Canadiens who's sitting right in Rochester, who's been part of the Sabre organization both before and now, where he's been helping the prospects in Rochester for 2 years, and Randy Cunningworth, who I think would be an excellent choice. He got a raw deal in Montreal. I've been around Randy when he was in Rochester coaching, and I think he'd be very good for the young players you were talking about when we started this interview that the Sabres both have and have coming up. I think he'd be an excellent choice. But quite honestly, I haven't heard his name being kicked around here as the type of candidate that they're looking for.
Now, it's interesting in Detroit that they're going to probably hand it to Blashill, who is their AHL coach, who knows the prospects, who's been part of that system. You'd think that you know, if you're not going to get the home run guy in Babcock, that a system guy who knows everybody and who's basically paid his dues in Cunningworth it would be a kind of a logical guy to bring in here. And I'm sure his financial requirements wouldn't be that much either.
Yeah, and that's the thing, that's the prospects Buffalo has. He's been, the last 2 years, it's like he'll take a prospect, like he'll take Mikhail Grigorenko, and he'll spend a practice with him. You know, he can do that individual while, you know, Chad Cassidy was running the practice as head coach and doing what he needed to do. He could keep Grigorenko afterwards, and he could go over tape with him. He was kind of a skills guy that was just individually with the young players. And so he already knows a lot of their young players. He has already worked with a lot of their young players. And I think that's a strong point of his coaching style, is being able to deal with young players. Now they now are looking for a head coach in Rochester too, but I don't know if Randy wants to go back to the AHL as a head coach. I think an NHL head coaching job might interest him though.
Yeah, I mean, Buffalo's not a glitter town. It's a lunch box kind of town. It's a, you know, earn your money kind of town. So it doesn't need the star candidate to be the head coach. But who would you say is the guy who matches up best with the market and with the talent base that you've got there?
A guy like Cunningworth, I think Bylsma is that type, because, you know, he coached in Pittsburgh, which is a similar type of hardworking blue-collar town. That he understands that kind of a town, and I think he might be a good fit here in Buffalo. And I know a lot of folks are fans, when they talk about it, are very interested in him and like the fact that he's won a Stanley Cup. Basically, forgive the rest of it. I mean, you can say he should have done better in Pittsburgh. He should have won more in Pittsburgh. But then after you say that, you say, well, could you really win with some of the goals that Fleury was letting in during the playoffs?
Yeah.
I mean, that he got some real tough goaltending, and he really didn't have anybody else to turn to. So, you know, there's pros and cons to both those arguments. But he definitely, I think, would be a guy that would fit Buffalo because he understands the mentality.
Talking to Paul Hamilton of WGR in Buffalo about the Sabres, their offseason and what's happening and sometimes what's not happening. Now, the Jack Eichel thing, I think, is pretty much set. I don't think anybody can foresee the Sabres trading out of the number two spot there. So let's assume that he's coming in. You've had a little bit of time to watch him and see him in some environments. How are you assessing Eichel, and how do you think he fits in terms of this team?
Well, I did see all of his games at the World Championships, and I'd seen him before playing at Boston College, but I thought he really, with the exception of one game, had a really, really strong tournament. And it's funny, one thing Murray did say the other day when he was talking about the Babcock thing is, who we draft second, I think, will probably be the easiest decision I'll make as general manager of the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah.
So he said he's had a call or two about the number one pick. I think he said two calls. And he says, go ahead, make an offer if you want to, but basically told the people that were calling that we're not trading out of here. So, and he's not looking to trade up either. It would just cost too much if you're trying to go for McDavid. So you're right, he's pigeonholed in there, and that's who he's taking. But the thing I liked about Eichel that struck me was how smart he is without the puck as an 18-year-old. He's playing against, in some cases, NHLers, and in some cases, NHLers that have been around a while.
Yeah.
And I noticed, you know, him back in the defensive zone, really getting into the play and really anticipating things where he could get the puck back and start getting it up ice and going the other way. And that maybe was the part I didn't know as well watching him at BU, was that part of his game and seeing him do it against professionals. Even professionals who played in the KHL, there were a lot of those in the World Championships. And that really impressed me, how he just was dogged on the puck and was always there and never gave up on a play, when either coming back or moving forward.
Yeah, and one of the things that you tend to like about college players is that they don't have a ton of the tread taken off their tires. They don't play as big a season. They're not, you know, all played at 70, 80, 100 games a season. So guys tend to come to the NHL a little bit fresher. They've got the skill set. That's always something that's nice when you get a guy from the colleges.
Yeah, and I think it can play against you a little bit too, just because college players tend to wear down a little bit around February time, just because they're not used to the grind of the NHL. And I thought, when I said Eichel played one poor game, I thought he really looked tired. And I think the coaching staff agreed, because he only played 14 minutes in that game. It was every other day they were playing, and he just looked kind of dead tired. But he had two more games after that, and I thought he snapped out of it well.
Is there any thought to, I know that the Sabres want to do the retooling, that they're committed to their youth and to the future, but is there any sense of maybe needing a guy or two to surround him with veteran presence guys so that he doesn't get overwhelmed, that there's not too much pressure on him to do everything?
I think that was the idea when they picked up Gianta and Georges. Gianta was the free agent, and they traded for Georges, and they signed Matt Molson, although I wouldn't put Matt Molson in the great leader category, but the other two I would. They are very good leaders, and I think have really taken that locker room. Mike Weber, who struggled 2 years ago and I thought really played much better last year, he's kind of a 6'7" defenseman type of thing, but he might be the best leader in that room. He's a no-nonsense, honest, hold-people-accountable type of guy. So they went out and got that, and when they were looking basically to hit the salary cap floor of the last year, they gave some people some contracts that probably they wouldn't have gotten in other places, especially a guy like Andre Mazzaros, who got over $4 million a year, who probably should have been playing in the American Hockey League.
Yeah.
And so I think they've done that a little bit now. I think they're looking to fill in the roster more and just improve the roster with better hockey players.
Well, here in the West, we always have a soft spot for a team that could beat the snot out of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And so we're really hoping the rebuild works, and so we can have many more years of misery out of the Leafs, and you guys can have some success, Paul.
Well, 17 picks in the first two rounds in 4 years, ending this year. Now, one of those picks they've traded away in Lemieux to Winnipeg in the Kane deal.
Yeah.
But to have 17 picks in the first two rounds in 4 years, if less than half of them come through, I think you still have a pretty darn good hockey team.
Yeah, the Red Wings have always said if we get two guys out of every draft, we think it's a successful draft. So it sounds like you got some pretty good odds there.
Yeah, they do. And Calgary, we watch here and see how quickly they were able to do it by getting some good young players and a guy that didn't even contribute to the playoffs in Bennett. A lot of people around here like to say, well, Buffalo should have taken Bennett. I said, well, one's played 13 games and one's played 9, and Reinhart could be at least, you know, make sure they play 20 NHL games before we start yelling bust or whatever. But, you know, Bennett looks, you know, from the little bit we saw, it looks like he's going to be a good young player. And we'll see what Reinhart turns into once he gets into his career.
Yeah, I think both teams are going to be pleased in the long run with the guys that they've gotten. And I appreciate you taking the time today, Paul. Tell us a little bit about what's going on. And hopefully we can talk to you when the Sabres decide on the ultimate guy for their head coach.
Sounds great. Take care.